This is the B-side of the lecture for August 1997, titled Zephaniah and Modern Times. When we read Zephaniah here, we see a prophecy that is within the context of the 6th century B.C., but it has to do with the day of the Lord, the day in the future when God is going to intervene in human affairs, the day that the book of Revelation and the book of Daniel talks about at the end of the age, which we're fast approaching. And here is Zephaniah giving a prophecy from God, principally to the people of Judah and Jerusalem. Now, he's going to be using some kings from outside the nation. We're going to see that in chapter 2 and chapter 3. But right here in the first chapter, setting the theme, he shows a judgment and a correction that he is bringing upon his own people because they have gone over to the teachings of Baal. They're dressing like Kimmerim in black garments. And you know most religious people today, especially their authorities, whether they're Jews, they're Christians, or Muslims, are dressing in black today. Isn't it most interesting that that is the case? Where God says in his temple, the priest should dress in white. It seemed like just exactly the opposite of what we want to do. Like I say, I've given up long time ago when I do a religious service of any kind to always insist on black garment. That just goes with the territory of paganism in the ancient past. I've been able to read these strictures that God says here in the book of Zephaniah, and I'm smart enough to understand what they mean. And I hope you're smart enough to understand what they mean, because they're very clear and very plain. It shows God's opinion on what people do in religious services. It doesn't show your opinion. It doesn't show my opinion. We may have little opinion at all on the whole subject. And what difference does it make what color suit you wear, you might say? Well, I'll tell you, it doesn't make any difference, I suppose, if you're ignorant and don't know any reason for it. But you know, what we ought to do is to find out how God looks on these things and to see his prophecies and to find out if we do practice paganism and Baalism in any of our services today in our religious beliefs. He says, I'm going to stretch out my hand, verse 4, upon Judah and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem, his own people. Why? Because they were going into the ways of Baal, that's verse 4, and the Kimmerims with their black-robed priests, their black-robed people that were mimicking the heathen, that worshiping the host of heaven with their stars and things of that nature that they have as symbols, that are turning their backs upon God. He says, I'm going to prepare a sacrifice for them then, and I'm going to invite them as guests. But it's going to be a sacrifice of judgment. It's going to be a sacrifice of chastisement. He goes on to say that it's going to be called the Day of the Lord's Sacrifice, verse 8. And why? Well, he says, I'm going to punish the princes of Judah, his own people. I'm going to punish the king's children. Why? Because the king's children, the princes, are leading the common people astray. And he says, all such that are clothed with foreign apparel, that is, strange garments that are foreign and they are not like the Israelites. You know, when you dress in a garment coming from a different area, from a particular culture or religious environment, you will act just like, and normally, just like those people do. And that is absolute fact. And here are God's judgment against the kings of and princes of Judah and the people of Judah and Jerusalem. He says they're clothed in strange garments. And also, in the same day will I punish those who leap on or over the threshold, which fill their master's house with violence and deceit. What does he mean, leap over the threshold? It's explained in 1 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 5 that was a custom of the Philistines, that they, in their superstitious rites, when they would come up to the temple of Dagon, their god, they would jump over the threshold because they wouldn't step on a crack that was there. They had to go over it for various reasons. In other words, superstitious actions, like when you go into a church, you've got to do certain things and actions, you know, or knock on wood, have you ever heard that, or various other superstitions and things. Like, for example, even in religious services, there are all types of things that people have done and are doing today that are physical things that are done you do not find in the scripture at all, but they're showing pagan ways and attributes and things like that, which is are not in conformity to the ways of God. For example, let me give you a superstition that lots of people have. You know, you see a black cat go in front of you or something like that. You say, oh, bad luck, or knock on wood. You see, that's just an illustration of like jumping over the threshold. The commentators are saying this. They only gave that as an example. That is, Zephaniah did, to show in a religious service that they're practicing pagan ideas and things which in themselves you would think mean little. But they are gestures, physical gestures, mimicking the pagans. And I'll tell you, you see them all over in our churches today. We have steeples up on the up on our churches to identify where the church is. And God says, I don't like high towers, you know. What did he do with the people back there after the flood when they wanted a tower that kind of reached up to heaven? It looked like it. He destroyed the tower and all of them. And we just adopt these pagan traditions all over the place. And that's what he is talking about here. You know what I do if I see a black cat go around in front of me? I deliberately go across it myself because I just know good and well it doesn't make any difference. If I see some number like 666, doesn't make any difference to me. I have an article on that. If you think that is wrong, well, superstitious about it, well, you sent for that article. You really need it. 666, there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. You ought to find out what the deal is about and what God means about that. And, you know, the only thing I won't do is walk under a ladder. I promise you I won't do that because I don't want paint on me or something of that nature. But that's the only reason. These superstitions are just ramifications of paganism. But if you participate in all of them, you're right in the middle of paganism, of Baalism, of things of that nature. That's what he's talking about. And they were being led by the king's princes, by the king's children, and by others. This was in the time of Josiah. Josiah himself was righteous, but the king's children weren't. And God says, I am going to start judging you. And some of those very children were the ones that had to be taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar a little bit later on because of the sins and evils that they were doing in ancient Judah. Going on, it says in verse 10, and it will come to pass in that day, saith the Lord, that they shall hear the noise of a cry from the fish gate, that's in Jerusalem, from the second, area of Jerusalem. And a great crashing from the hills are going to happen. Right in the middle of Jerusalem, he says, I'm going to bring judgment. Howl, you inhabitants of Mektesh, that means of the mortared area. And for all the merchant people, they're going to be cut down that come to Jerusalem. All they that bear silver are going to be cut off. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with candles. They never had candles in those days. That's King James. It means with lamps. But I'm going to search it out with lights. I'm going to go into every little corner, he says. I'm going to punish the men that are settled on their lees, sitting back, relaxing, and not thinking about all of these things that are wrong, that say in their heart, oh, the Lord will not do good, nor will he do evil. Doesn't make any difference. Well, I'm going to search them out, he says. Therefore, their goods shall become booty, their houses a desolation. They shall also build houses, but they're not going to inhabit them. And they shall plant vineyards, but they're not going to drink the wine thereof. The great day of the Lord is near. Now, this did happen to ancient Judah. That's quite true. But it has ramifications for the end time, and we're going to see that. It has to do with things that never happened in the seventh century, the last part of the seventh and the beginning of the sixth century B.C. It says here, a day of the Lord is on the horizon. It is near. It is near, and haste greatly, even the voice of the day of the Lord. The mighty men shall cry there bitterly. So you see, he's preparing a sacrifice. But who's going to be sacrificed on the altar? It's going to be the people who are doing these things wrong. Of God's own people who are doing these things wrong deliberately. Now, that's what he says. Now, in the next chapter, you're going to find that the people who are not doing them are going to be saved during this time. Absolutely. But the people who do them settle on their lees and said, oh, God couldn't care less one way or another. They are going to find out if he cares less or not. And they say, oh, it doesn't make any difference how you dress. It doesn't make any difference if you have black, green, blue, or polka dot. Well, to God it does. If you understand the truth, if you understand the paganism that is coming out, he's going on to say this is a day of wrath, verse 15, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation. Now, that's not Ernest Martin. I'm speaking, but that's not Ernest Martin making this up. This is written in Zephaniah. This is the word of God. A day of darkness. gloominess, a day of clouds, thick darkness, a day of the trumpet and alarm. That means war. And against the high towers, I will bring distress upon men, and they shall walk like blind men, because they have sinned against the Lord, and their blood shall be poured out as dust, and their flesh as dung. Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Lord's wrath. Now, you know when that day of the Lord's wrath starts? Revelation chapter 6, the last verse. It says about the Father and the Son, the day of their wrath. The seven trumpets starts with chapter 7 of the book of Revelation. The last trumpet is divided into seven last plagues, going into chapter 16 of the book of Revelation. We find that whole section there is a seven-year period divided in half. 3.5 years on one side, when the two witnesses will be there at the building of a temple in Jerusalem. The 3.5 years on the other side, when the beast and the false prophet are going to be there. We find a seven-year period. This is mentioned in the book of Habakkuk, the previous prophet, who is the contemporary here of this Zephaniah. And he says in the middle of that is when there's going to be a release, a peace for the people of God. All right, going on here. This day of the Lord, it's going to come. And the last verse, 18 here of chapter 1, but the whole land shall be devoured by the fire of his, God's, jealousy. For he shall make even a speedy riddance of all them that dwell in the land, unquote. Now, that is the disobedient who are in the land. And it concerns those of Judah and Jerusalem. No one else. He's not talking about anyone else here. He's talking about his own people. But then, though, chapter 2 comes along. Now, verses 1, 2, and 3 are verses which we ought to read that are going to happen in the day of the Lord. Because it says here in chapter 2 that the first chapter here that we have just gone through is a decree from God. It is a judgment from God, a decree, which he has. You know what a decree is. It means something like an ordinance, like a commandment. It's been written, and there it is. Now here's what it says in chapter 2, verse 1, Zephaniah, gather yourselves together, yea, gather together, O nation not desired. Who is the nation not desired? By the people of Jerusalem and Judah, who are the king's sons and the princes. The nation not desired are the lowly of mind, the worshipers of the true God. Okay, gather yourselves together, he says, before the decree brings forth. Before this decree starts, that I'm talking about in the first chapter, he says, gather yourselves together. Before the day pass as the chaff, before the fierce anger of the Lord come upon you, before the day of the Lord's anger come upon you, seek you the Lord. That means before the day comes, seek you the Lord. All you meek of the earth or the land, it means the land of Judah, which have wrought his judgment, God's judgment, you seek righteousness, you seek meekness, you shall be hid in the day of the Lord. When it says maybe, what it means is you will be. You will be hid in the day of the Lord. Now, that is a commandment of respite, a peace that Habakkuk was talking about. But you can actually have peace and security. Now, it did say may. It's in the subjunctive. But the point is, do you think that God is going to cause chaos on people that don't deserve it? Well, he's never done that before, you know, in this sense of judgment. The judgment is upon these people who are practicing wrong. And he says, you may be hid in the day of the Lord. But what about, now that's the nation of Israel, Judah, I should say. But what about the surrounding nations in the day of the Lord? Ah, that's when he gets into it now. In verse 4, all the way down to the rest of the chapter, it's what's going to happen with the heathen also in the day of the Lord. Now, this has never happened in history. Never. But it's going to happen in that seven-year period in advance of us. We've been hearing a little bit lately about Gaza, haven't we? You know, that is where the new Palestinian state is beginning. That is down there in Israel, in the land of Israel, and adjacent to Israel, I should say, at the present time. Well, look at verse 4 here. Here he starts then on what's going to happen to the nations around Judah in the day of the Lord. Gaza shall be forsaken. Ashkelon, a desolation. They shall drive out Ashdod, that's one of the seacoast cities, at noonday. Ekron shall be rooted up. These are Philistine cities on the coast. Woe unto the inhabitants of the seacoast, the nation of the Carathites. The Philistines originally came from Crete, not Carathites being Crete. The word of the Lord is against you, O Canaan, the land of the Philistines. I will even destroy you, that you shall be no inheritance. The seacoast shall be dwellings and cottages for shepherds, folds for flocks. The coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah. They shall feed thereupon in the houses of Ashkelon. Shall they lie down in the evening, for the Lord their God shall visit them and turn away their captivity. Jews are at the present time in Ashkelon and in Ashdod. But here is a prophecy about these cities being destroyed. And after they're destroyed during the day of the Lord, the Jews will come back or come to Ashkelon and to Ashdod. That's what it says, for a remnant. Then it goes on. That's the seacoast there of the Philistines. But what about the other nations around? What about on the other side of Jordan? There's Moab and Ammon on that side. Well, look at here, verse 8. I have heard the reproach of Moab and the revilings of the children of Ammon, whereby they have reproached my people. Now, this is in the time of the day of the Lord. They've magnified themselves against their border. They've taken away a land from Judah or Israel at this time. Now, in this particular time, therefore, as I live, saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, surely Moab shall be as Sodom, the children of Ammon as Gomorrah, even the breeding of nettles and salt pits, and a perpetual desolation, the residue or the rest of my people shall spoil them, and the remnant of my people shall possess them. They're going to take over Moab and Ammon. But you know Moab and Ammon right now aren't completely desolate. I've been to Ammon many times. It's quite nice country over there. But a time is coming in the day of the Lord when these things are going to happen. And then Israel will come and take over the land once more. This shall they have for their pride, because they have reproached and magnified themselves against the people of the Lord of hosts. Now that may have happened in the past, but you know something? It's also going to happen in the future. This is a prophecy about the day of the Lord, because the day of the Lord really has never occurred in history. It's in the book of Revelation where the day of the Lord is introduced. But it doesn't stop that. There, it goes on to say, the Lord will be terrible unto them. He will famish their gods of the earth, and men shall worship him that is God. Now, when is this? Every one from his place, even all the isles of the heathen, are going to worship God one of these days when this occurs as a result of the end of the day of the Lord. Now, here we start verse 12. 12 to 15. It starts out by saying, in the King James Version, you Ethiopians. Remember at the beginning of this lecture where I said that the word really is Cushites? It's the English that have said the Cushites must be the Ethiopians. Well, it's true that the Greeks named them being dark people. That is skin, dark skin. And there were two Ethiopians, or Ethiopias in a sense. The one that has come down to us, we're most familiar, is the one in Africa. All right, that's one branch of them. The other branch went into the east, went into India. And they were known as Cushites. And we read of and hear of the Hindu Kush to this present time. And you know the people of India are dark-skinned people. And the people of Kush or in Ethiopia and Africa are dark-skinned people. Now, they're both different races, but they come from Kush. But that's not the Kush that's being talked of, either in India or Africa. The Kush here is the same Kush mentioned in the book of Habakkuk. The Cushan people, the Cassites, the Cushites, who first settled and dominated in a sovereign way the first nations after the flood under Nimrod, who was from Cush, Ham. They were the first world despots. The people who lived in the Cushan area were those who lived between the rivers, as it says in Habakkuk. And remember, Habakkuk is a contemporary of Zephaniah. You've got to get the geography that they were used to and apply it to our end time if we want to understand what is being talked of here. This is the land of Mesopotamia that's being talked of. What you should do, you check the commentaries if you want to. And you should, just don't take my word for it. But I'll tell you what you really should do is to cross out that word Ethiopia and put down there Cushites. Or if you want it in the Babylonian way of looking at it, Cassites. And on cuneiform tablets, these clay tablets, you know, that have been found in Mesopotamia, I've seen them myself. And found some myself over there, as a matter of fact. And you can read the cuneiform wedge-shaped writings on it, and so forth. People can who are scholars. And you can get information from them. The Kassites were a people who lived in Mesopotamia. That is what is being talked of. Those are the ones who are being talked of in this particular context here. The Kassites of Mesopotamia. Now, what is going to happen to them? He then spreads the field from Jerusalem to the coastal areas of the Philistines, over on the east side of Jordan with the Moabites and the Ammonites. Now he's reaching up to the people who were the sovereign people at the time, who were just at the end of the Assyrian Empire, were emerging up to become the great and powerful Babylonian Empire of Nebuchadnezzar. And he was the one who Daniel met, and Daniel said was to become the head of gold of a new Babylonian system that would last all the way down to the 10 toes. And the 10 toes would be those people who would live or exist, or those kings at the end of the age, that a mountain would emerge, a rock would come down the mountain and hit the image, the Babylonian image, on the feet, on the 10 toes. It would be knocked over, the Babylonian system, and that stone then would pummel the whole of the Babylonian image into powder, and the wind would blow it into smithereens, all into the atmosphere, and it would be no more. That Babylonian image was to last until the end of the age. The 10 nations are mentioned there, also in the book of Daniel, in the book of Revelation. And this Babylonian image here is nothing more than the head of gold with Nebuchadnezzar, the Persian period being silver, the Javanic period, the Greek period, being the lesser as we go on down, bronze, and then finally with iron, and iron mixed with miry clay. Remember the prophecy? Chapter 2 of the book of Daniel. But the whole Babylonian image is going to last until the end time. These Kassites here are the last remnants of Babylon that are going to be in existence at the end of this age, in this 7-year period known as the Day of the Lord that the book of Zephaniah is talking about. That's why you need the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation to put these prophecies in the minor prophets into their proper chronological and prophetic scenarios, so that you will be able to comprehend what is going on. All right, O you Kassites, is what he says, not Ethiopians. O you people of Mesopotamia, also, you shall be slain by my sword. Going on, he will stretch out his hand against the north. You see, that's where it is, up north. Destroy Assyria. That's in that area. He will make Nineveh a desolation. And that happened about 10, 15 years afterward. And dry like a wilderness, the flocks shall lie down in the midst of her. All the beasts of the nations, both the cormorant, the bittern, shall lodge in the upper lintels of it. And it goes on. And it says the city of Babylon down here in verse 15, a careless city, carefree city, and all of that, said it's going to howl in desolation. Then we come to chapter 3, which speaks of Zion. This deals with the judgment upon Judah and upon the surrounding nations. And it has to do with the day of the Lord. But then we come in chapter 3. And all the way to the end, to the remnant of Israel, which will come out of this holocaust called the Day of the Lord at the end of the age. It says in chapter 3, woe to her, is the personage or the city or the individual is not even identified at first. But as you go on, you find out who the her is, who the she is in this case. It's going to be Zion, and it's God talking about his own city, his new city, his Zion, that he is going to be bringing to pass. However, the Zion that he has destroyed is called the filthy and polluted, the oppressing city. That's what the original Jerusalem was like that he's talking about. She obeyed not the voice. She received not correction. She trusted not the Lord. She drew not near to her God. Her princes within her are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves. They gnaw at the bones till the morrow. Her prophets are light. That means that they are very frivolous and treacherous persons. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. The just Lord is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. Every morning does he bring his judgment to light, that is, for the morning sacrifice. He fails not, but the unjust, what do? They don't know any shame. They have no shame. God is in the midst of them, but they know no shame. He says, I've cut off the nations, the Philistines, Moab, Ammon, Assyria, the Cushites, the Cassites. Babylon has been destroyed. I made their streets waste, that none pass by. Their cities are destroyed, so that there is no man, and there is no inhabitant left. I said, surely you then will fear me, that you will receive instruction, so their dwelling should not be cut off. Howsoever I punish them, but they rose early and corrupted all their doings. They still continued. And it goes on to say, wait you upon me, Lord, until the day that I rise up to pray, for my determination is to gather the nations, I may assemble the kingdoms, and he's going to bring a pure language finally into Israel. It doesn't mean a language it's going to be a pure language like God speaks, is what he means. Like he says in the Psalm, my language. It's going to be a language which is going to be perfect and righteous and good. He is going to clean up Israel, called in verse 13, the remnant of Israel. Though they do iniquity, though they have done despiteful things, though they have speaking lies and all of that, he is going to come and he is finally going to bring the solemn assembly and a burden upon them, it says in verse 18. Verse 20, at that time will I bring you again, even in time will I gather you, I will make you a name, a very powerful people, a praise among all people of the earth, when I turn back your captivity before your eyes, saith the Lord. And that ends it. In other words, even after we find that the nations are destroyed, Israel is still not quite right with God. But then he sees a chance to bring a pure language to them. He brings it to them, and finally, they are saved in him. That is the prophecy of Zephaniah. It's a beautiful thing, and it means salvation and redemption in the end. This concludes the B section of the prophecy of Zephaniah and modern times.